Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back.
You are listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
And good evening. Welcome once again to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious. And if that isn't enough, Lynn Nickerson.
Hi. Good evening, Willie. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I would like to say it was a lovely day, but it certainly wasn't, was it?
Well, no, not exactly. Not weather-wise, but, you know, otherwise it's been a pretty good
Socially,
day.
Socially, it's been a very pleasant day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. Has anything exciting happened since last we spoke?
You mean a couple of minutes ago? No, not a darn thing.
Okay. Well, I don't know then.
But a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, a couple of hours ago.
We made the acquaintance of a very lovely person.
Well, actually, I was going to mention that I had met him over the weekend at...
I know, you're always the first. You always do things before me, Willie.
At Spirit Quest.
Uh-huh.
Which was a fun weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, should I just introduce him, you think?
Please do.
Well, since you said please. Okay, this week on Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, joining us in the studio this week, all the way from the UK, he came all the way over here.
It's a long swim.
Yeah, he came all the way over here just to be with us in the studio, and, well, maybe a few other things, too.
Yeah, but we were first, weren't we?
I'm not sure where we came in, but... anyway, our guest is Dylan Jones, and Dylan is a former police officer and former freelance broadcast assistant at BBC Radio in Derby. Dylan's interest in the paranormal started when he was about 8 years old. He says he can still vividly remember a personal experience from that time, which I believe we'll talk about later. In 2010, Dylan founded the Great British Ghost Tour. As a paranormal investigator, he soon realized the benefits of employing police investigation techniques to the study of spontaneous phenomena. He is currently media producer / company director at Cuties Media. Dylan is currently producing a documentary on the comparison between England's ghosts and ghost hunters versus New England's ghosts and ghost hunters. He is also a member of Parascience, along with our friend Steve Parsons, and he is right here in the studio tonight. Welcome, Dylan.
Welcome, Dylan. It's nice to meet you and nice to have you on.
Thank you both for having me to be here this evening, and it's been a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure having you.
It is a pleasure.
It's fun.
And you came all this way just for us, right?
Yeah, that's right. As Lynn said, it was a long swim.
A long swim, yeah.
Pause before I go back.
We're so grateful.
I thought the station sprung for a canoe. You had to swim?
Either that or a raft.
Yeah, at least something.
But the important thing is he's here. So... being a police officer, you had mentioned that you would apply some of the techniques or the skills that you had learned while you were studying your hobby. So you want to veer away from the idea of crystals and dowsing rods and so forth. So in the course of investigating something, what were you using? Were you using your intuition? What were you relying on?
What I was relying on was studying what the most important thing is when someone has one of these experiences, and that is the personal experience, because you need a person to be able to report seeing
That's
a
right.
ghost, having some, feeling a drop in temperature, seeing something move. It's a person that's always at the heart of the experience. So the first thing you need to do is document what that person has experienced. So looking at it and thinking, well, you know, police officers deal with human experiences every day, be it in the form of crime. But the same thing from a paranormal investigator is they're dealing with a person who's had an experience. So being able to get that experience down on paper is the first stage in understanding what has gone on.
There is a problem there, though, because your typical person on the street, if something's happened to them, they're not always really observant like a detective or an officer is trained to be. So do you find that sometimes you're getting some mixed signals or some misinformation?
I think, first of all, being a police officer doesn't necessarily make you a better witness.
Okay.
Because police officers do make mistakes.
What
they do, in what they see.
But they're trained to be observant, they have an edge on the typical witness.
They do have training for certain things, but they can still get things wrong. So it's very important when you're dealing with a witness to get them in the right frame of mind in relaying the experience. And that's where the training comes in obtaining witness statements.
From the paranormal.
For a particular way that, I don't know how they go about it in here in the USA. I don't know what their training is, but in the UK, we look at what's called the cognitive approach to gathering information. So it's how you're trained to sit down with a witness and take on board what it is they've experienced and then get that down on paper. And there's a specific way that you can go about doing that.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd have to have some kind of format to be, you know,
yeah,
regimented.
There is a format, yeah.
What I wanted to ask you was, people experience the paranormal in different ways. I just lost what I was going to ask you. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
There was a method to my madness. We can move on to something else. But other than observing their behavior or what they have to say, is there anything else that you relied on that might be considered scientific, technological, other than crystals and dowsing rods?
Well, do you know what? It was something that occurred to me back in about 2006. And I was running a group in South Wales where I lived and worked. And, you know, it was pretty much in the sort of early days, the infancy of paranormal reality television.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of people out there, and I was guilty of this, that we went out and invested in EMF meters and, you know, the old tri-field and negative ion detectors and things like that. And I remember being at a house that had a haunted reputation associated with it. We were spending a lot of time investigating it. And I remember standing there one evening holding an EMF meter, and it suddenly occurred to me that I really shouldn't be using this bit of kit.
Why?
Well, I applied the policing principle to it, and I'll give you an example. It's what I always say to people. If a police officer standing at the side of the road stops you and they want to give you a breath test to see if you've been drinking, okay? Firstly, you're going to want to say, or you're going to see that, firstly, this is a police officer. Secondly, you'd expect them to be trained in that bit of kit.
Sure.
They know its shortcomings. They know what to do with it. They know the law.
Yeah.
They know then what is going to happen after you've taken it, what they're going to do with the data that they've obtained from it. And I suddenly looked at this EMF meter and thought, I got a little bit of an understanding about why people think they're using it, but I've had no training to use it. It's not actually given me a lot of data that I know how to interpret.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and I asked myself, well, if I was, you know, claiming to be a professional expert witness, I'm not actually an expert in this. I've got no knowledge of the actual application of why people are using it. You need somebody who's a physicist who understands it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'll stick to what I know, which is I'm trained to interview people. I'm trained on getting information out of a witness in terms of what they've experienced. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm good at. That's what I'm trained to do. I'll leave the equipment to somebody who's actually trained to use it. And I think in reality, the more I've dealt with it over the last 15 years or so, it's become obvious to me that there are very few people who are actually trained in it. So I refer everything to Steve Parsons at this point.
That's a very good point and a very good way to do it. Mm.
Do you find yourself relying on, or did you, relying on your intuition?
No, because I know that intuition, you know, can be misinterpreted.
Okay.
And I know that witnesses are not very reliable.
Well, it doesn't mean that you have to lean on your intuition, but don't you take it into consideration?
I've learned on a number of occasions dealing with people professionally that you can't, you shouldn't trust your intuition because you have to deal with facts. Belief doesn't prove anything. Facts do. I could have believed somebody was guilty
lying.
Of doing something. I could believe somebody was lying. Mm. But unless I can prove it, it doesn't mean a hill of beans. So you
no,
have
that's
to,
true.
You know, if you're going to construct a case on the paranormal, if something's happening, you have to be able to present facts. They're the only things that you can make a basis on.
Don't you think the intuition sometimes gives you an idea of which direction to lead your investigation in?
No.
No?
No.
Okay,
you have
just
to deal
the
with
facts,
what's,
ma'am.
What's in front of you.
Just the facts. Okay.
Because, you know, there are occasions where you listen to yourself and you think, I was wrong there. And there are times you listen to it and you're right.
Sure.
So how do you know which one to do?
Well, you certainly can lean on your intuition to lead you to ask certain questions to get to the facts.
Yes, but that comes with experience as well.
True.
So it's, I know you can have like a gut feeling on something.
Yeah.
You know, there was a certain sort of. You know, inbred into us, you could say, couldn't you? That, you know, fight or flight, you get that sense.
Yeah.
You know, but when you want to present evidence to somebody, you have to look at what you can actually demonstrate. And it's being, you know, you don't want to impede your investigation. That's the way I look at it.
We were talking about Liverpool and Gold Street.
Gold Street, yes.
Did you sense anything, or did you speak to firsthand witnesses that had experienced time slips in that area?
No.
Okay, Steve has, of
Steve
course,
has,
hasn't
yeah,
he?
That's something that, you know, Steve is, a native of Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his colleague, and my colleague Anne Winspur, that's where they've done a lot of work. That's a case that I've never been involved in. Mm-hmm. I've read the stuff that their research, and it's on the Parascience website.
Yes, some interesting stuff.
And it's fascinating.
I find the place fascinating. Do you have any theory on perhaps why that particular area experiences so many time slips?
I'm not a big one on theories.
Okay. Any ideas then?
Well, I think I don't tend to get bogged down in theories because I try to concentrate on what I've got to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me takes away what I'm there to do. Mm-hmm. I'm there to get somebody's experience down on paper. And I basically haven't got the time to come up with theories. Because I think if you have a theory, that can sometimes steer you towards looking at things in a certain way. So I try and detach myself from that. And it was the same in policing. You know, or why did somebody do this? If you spend too much time looking at it, you don't focus on what you actually need to do.
Did you study psychology at all?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that perhaps being so close to the water, that has something to do with amplifying things? Or
no.
You don't think so?
No, I've never...
Or you don't consider it?
I don't consider it. I don't tend to look at the application of those kinds of things to what I do because it's beyond my realm of expertise.
Okay.
You know, I stick very... And I'm a believer in when you're investigating something, you stick to what you know and what you're professionally capable of.
Okay, so you do like investigating for apparitions and ghosts.
Oh, yes.
It's
something that's fascinated me.
Okay.
You know, from, as Willie said at the top of the program, since I was about 7 or 8 years old. But it's always the human experience.
So how is it you investigate? What is it you use? What methods do you apply or methodologies do you apply?
So if and when a report comes in, the first thing is getting to know the witness, the person who's reporting it, and then going through a series of stages at looking at how to take the witness statement from them. So it's sitting down with them, and as I said, it's using what they call the cognitive approach to witness interviewing. And that's getting the witness pretty much into context about what it is they've experienced. So allowing the witness to tell me exactly what has happened without interrupting them in any way, just getting them. And that can be a task in itself, because as you know, everybody is different. Some people, you ask them a question and they go with it. They can't stop them talking, which is great. But then others, you really have to try and allow them to feel comfortable. So knowing things about where you conduct the interview, when you conduct the interview, who's present when the interview is being conducted. So ideally having the witness in the surroundings in which they themselves are comfortable.
They can point things out to you and so forth. Yeah,
and ideally in the location where it's happened as well, because, you know, when somebody tries to explain to you, oh, well, I was in such and such a place, and you're trying to visualize what that is.
Yeah. So you want it in context when you're interviewing
them. Exactly,
yeah. But do you always interview these people that have experienced it before you go to investigate a location?
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't ever go someplace blindly just to pick up what you can pick up?
I want to visit places. I do have an interest in hauntings. And you know, whilst I'm in New England, I am visiting places.
Sure.
But in terms of do I go and see what I can pick up, no.
No? Okay. So you interview someone, and then once they've finally given your story, or you've collected the different various accounts, personal accounts, then do you go by yourself and try to determine what's going on?
No, it would be a question then of working with others.
Investigating.
To investigate it.
And other than interviewing, what else is it that you do?
Well, I mean, we try to replicate the experience the witness has reported.
Yeah.
So, for example, and as you see on all of these paranormal television shows, it's let's turn the lights out and let's do it at night. Well, if the witness has an experience at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a bright sunny day, why would you want to turn all the lights out? Mm-hmm. Surely you're trying to understand what the witness experienced at that time. And very often you'll find that witnesses weren't actually looking for ghosts when they had the experience.
Truly, yeah. Mm.
They were doing something probably so mundane and boring that's what you want to be doing. You're trying to replicate you're trying to get into the situation that they were in. So, for example, if they were just sat there in their office typing away at a computer, well, that's what, you know, that's the time and the activity that perhaps you should be there.
Investigating.
You want to be physically where they were to try and understand it. So, you know, why do an investigation at night when there's no need?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you love investigating ghosts. There's so many different conditions and situations where they occur. So how can you not develop some kind of a theory as to what's happening?
I just don't allow myself to. I find you can become very much sidetracked in developing a theory, but how do you then go about testing it?
How can you go about understanding it if there's no theory to work from? Because you can have several different theories. You can have different little subsets of what you think might be causing this or how it occurred.
The problem is you can get bogged down in it.
Okay, so after you've done an investigation, what kind of conclusion do you come to, or do you ever come to some kind of a conclusion?
I think, to be honest, I think unless you can actually prove there was a perfectly normal explanation for something, such as
something naturally
natural, like that the noises were caused by a loose spring in something, which has happened in the past, where, you know, an alarm clock had a loose spring and it vibrated through that down the leg of a chair.
And it went on
downstairs, and it gets amplified. If you can't find it, then it just becomes unresolved.
Unresolved, so therefore it's probably not natural.
Who knows?
It might be paranormal.
You have to be open
and
there could be a paranormal cause to it.
Yeah.
But if you don't know, you just don't know.
So there really isn't. Is there any case where you can actually say, yes, this was paranormal? No, is it? Okay. I thought that's what you were going to say. Yeah.
It's something that there is pretty much, there are so many cases where the answer is we just don't know.
Right.
We've never reached a satisfactory conclusion.
Do you want to know?
Yes, that's why we do it. That we want to know if something's going on.
Do you establish different tenets of occurrences that happen and you don't draw any kind of conclusion? What would it take for you to draw a conclusion to declare something paranormal?
I think you'd have to have something on there where the evidence is very strong to support it.
Very strong because it's unexplainable?
Because you've got something which, I mean, like, I've been in locations, and I know Steve has had some experiences where, you know, sounds have been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so difficult because you need to present that information to your peers.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be so strong that they go, yeah, that's, you know, that's paranormal. But you're not going to get it, I don't think, unless literally the old adage that, you know, a ghost walks in front of you and it's all recorded on camera and it's vouched for by a lot, you know, a huge number of witnesses. There will always be those now.
It doesn't very often happen.
Who it's not enough. Whatever proof you do is not enough.
That's true.
Somebody's just never going to believe it.
Yeah.
Well,
but along that lines, what is your take on EVPs?
Good question. You know, I've heard a lot, not as many as some people. I don't engage in recording EVPs. My colleague Anne Winsper, she's the one currently doing a PhD on EVP. But I've listened to quite a few, and I'm sorry, but I tend to be one of these people who hear something, and I don't hear anything in it.
And you don't hear anything in it?
All I hear is just noise.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. You know, and I think there is a psychology to it. I mean, that's what Anne Winsper is looking at, is the psychology of EVP. If you're more of a believer, are you more inclined to hear patterns in sound?
Perhaps.
And, you know, there's the old adage as well that it's only when they put up the subtitle on the YouTube video. Oh, yes, I get it.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah.
We've been listening to a few over the last couple of weeks where, you know, you don't hear it or you play it blind to a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the 30 people in the room all come out with their own interpretation of what was heard. So you get 30 different answers to the same sound.
Do you present the information without any kind of context?
Yeah, because I think if you give context, that starts people making assumptions on what it could be.
Sometimes things just won't fall together or make any sense unless you give them some kind of context.
But then you've got to be very careful in terms of, you know,
it predisposes them to a certain,
be very careful.
Thought pattern
I mean, what we know of a number of psychologists who've done some really good studies on this, and it's...
But things don't happen in a vacuum. They happen in a context. They happen within an environment.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You don't feel that that has to be established in the end, perhaps?
As I said, I'm not a scientist.
Mm.
So I reserve all the scientific questions to somebody who does just that.
Okay. So what about when you're experiencing, or maybe not you experiencing something, but when you take an account of perhaps several people that say they saw a tiny little black dog,
mm-hmm.
And then you may find out through historical research that, the queen had a black dog and somebody kicked it and it died.
Mm.
So does that give you some kind of indication that perhaps those sightings were actually paranormal?
I mean, it certainly lends the credibility of the case. I mean, it would be the same if it was a criminal case. I mean, if I said to you, you know, four people witnessed a robbery and they all say the same thing. If that went to court, it would probably be...
Yeah, pretty strong.
You'd probably get a good verdict on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if four people saw or claimed to see an apparition, people would still doubt it.
Well...
But the evidence, you know...
Judge was there and saw it himself, you're never really going to know.
Exactly. But there is one of my colleagues, a solicitor by the name of Alan Murdy in the UK. He's written a number of very good books on ghosts and hauntings. And he challenged this statement with, you know, there's the saying that, you know, if you're going to make, you know, an extraordinary claim, you need an extraordinary amount of proof. Well, the thing is, you don't get that in a criminal case. You either get proof or no proof. It's just proof. It's just evidence. It's not extraordinary evidence. It's just evidence.
Well, sometimes it's overwhelming evidence.
But a body of evidence that is so persuasive.
Yes.
But all we can do is gather what evidence we can and present it.
Would it make a difference to you if you were the one who saw the little black ghost dog and then had it followed up with historical history?
That's a very good question. I don't know until that happens to me.
Thanks so much for that answer.
You know, if I had an experience that, you know, was certainly witnessed by other people, then
might you
who
think?
Who knows?
Perhaps.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But it could be a hallucination that you've all shared. Who knows?
Oh, here we are. We've almost blown a half an hour on that.
I'm sorry my answers can seem so evasive, but...
No, I really want to get to the bottom of how you interpret this, what your take is on it. And it's very similar to Steve Parsons.
Perhaps it is.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah. We do differ on certain points.
Yeah. But on that, you pretty much agree. Well, we're getting close to the bottom of the hour, I suppose.
Yeah, why don't we?
Yeah, why don't we just take a quick break now? So we're talking to Dylan Jones. He's our guest for tonight, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org. Welcome back to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. Tonight we are talking to Dylan Jones. And if anybody would like to call us and ask Dylan a question or make a comment, 603-430-9722. Or if you don't want to call, you can text that same number, 603-430-9722. Welcome back, Dylan.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you again.
Yes.
It's been a couple of minutes.
It has.
Well, you know, you had mentioned to us that you had an experience when you were a child. Mm-hmm. So how could you tell us about that and how you interpreted it as a dream or as real?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I said, about 7, 8 years of age. My uncle had passed away some months before. We were very close. He was a police officer.
Oh.
So it was, you know, he had a big effect on my life in all in so many ways. And I remember waking up during the night and looking towards my bedroom door. And at the time, thought I saw him standing there and just fading away into nothing. So I called out. And then I called out for my mum. And she came into the bedroom, turned the lights on, and that was the experience. Now, at the time, I thought I saw him there. But knowing now what I know about hypnagogic and hypnopompic experiences, that dreamlike state, either when you're going to sleep or when waking up, that could have been an explanation for what I experienced. It could have been that I actually did see him. Mm-hmm. But because you know about the fact that there is a psychological explanation for it, you know.
Or that there could be.
That there could be.
Yeah.
That, you know, I have to be open to the fact, well, it could be either one of those. So that was the experience that got to me as a child. And then, of course, there were other reasons why I became interested in the paranormal later.
And back to that experience, but also you told us that there were other family members that, like, smelled his cologne and other things. So,
yeah.
I mean, didn't that verify it for you?
I mean, that's what certainly got me, you know, very interested in the subject and wanting to find out more, because even back then, you know, there were people reporting something that happened to them that was so personal and meant so much.
Yeah.
You know, my mum smelt his cologne. I know that my auntie, she smelt it. There was that feeling of the touch of somebody on touching the shoulders. So there were a series of things that, you know, people were telling me, and I trust these people implicitly. I mean, you know, if you can't trust your parents, who can you trust?
Right.
I think at that age, you tend to believe whatever you're told.
Mm.
It's only as you grow up and you understand that, you know, people can be mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, so that's when it becomes tempered with, you know, a bit of skepticism, I suppose, or cynicism in some respects. But, you know, if only we could base it on belief straight away, you know, things would be different, I think.
There's just so much that we don't understand about different dimensions and the light spectrums and how different people perceive things visually in different ways, too.
Yeah.
So that can attribute to some of the differences. So we were asking you also, too, when you do investigations, what are your methodologies?
Right.
What do you use for equipment, if you use any? What do you do?
I do use equipment. Is the highly technical piece of paper and pencil.
Ah. Sharp, you know, pencil, too, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Prop Steve Parsons
eraser
with it every now and again. No, I mean, it's, joking aside, you know, keeping notes is one of the most important things.
I think so, too, and where.
Yeah, exactly. But then, no, bits of equipment that I would use, and it's dependent on what the witness has reported. So if they report visual phenomena, then you're going to have a camera. You know,
mm-hmm.
Most people, I think, are competent at using a camera. I would use sound recording if there was any form of audible effects that had been reported, because obviously you want to try and capture the sounds in the environment that people are hearing.
Okay.
And temperature. That's one of the things that is most often overlooked
temperature
in cases.
Changes, huh?
But I'm not one of these people, and you know, Steve would reiterate this, that if people are reporting certain things, well, focus the equipment on what is being reported, not what isn't, because that's just other data that you've just got to try and get through.
But
then again, if the claim is they saw something,
mm-hmm.
and if you did bring in an audio recorder,
yeah,
you might catch something else that's going to back it up.
Right.
But if you don't, then you're going to miss it.
Yeah, you might. But it comes back to something that we used to use in the police, and it's called intelligence-led policing. You can only go with, you know, what you've got.
Yeah.
You could do the blanket and throw every bit of equipment that you've got, but it means getting it there, setting it all up, you know, and then having to pour over everything that you've got later on.
Yeah.
Which is time-consuming. So it's focus on what you can achieve. It's being realistic. If you've got a camera, the chances are that it's going to have audio recorded in the background anyway.
Yeah, video. Yeah.
So yeah. You know, it's just, you know, I stay away from EMF meters and those kind of things, because a lot of what you see on television is pseudoscience in relation to that. Leave it to the people who genuinely do know what that bit of equipment is for.
I bet I know what your theory is on the spirit box.
It's a great doorstop.
You're awful.
I know.
Well, I have to agree with you on that one.
I mean, I am not a scientist. I know Steve has taken those things apart and knows how they work and can replicate the way these things can be manipulated.
Yeah.
So
they can be manipulated, or just they haphazardly bring up certain kinds of information.
You best speak to Steve on that one.
Oh, all right.
So, I mean, yeah. What bothers me about them is it's radio. You know, you're picking up, and especially if you're asking like a yes or no question,
yeah.
It's going to be really easy to hear that.
Well, I could give a very short example from my radio career back in the mid-90s. I worked in a commercial station in Cardiff, which is the capital of Wales, and a friend of mine, he was the engineer for the radio station, and he came to me all excited one day. And he said, "You'll never guess what I've got through the post today. Somebody has sent me a cassette of a recording of our radio station." I'm thinking, well, yeah, great, you know, but, you know, why are you telling me? He said, "Yes, but it was sent from Finland."
Oh, my.
Now, the FM signal, and this must have been a really stray occurrence, had gone from Cardiff hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles to Finland, and somebody had picked it up. Technically, very difficult to have happened, but it just shows what can happen with radio waves.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It could have been a very, you know, very high ionosphere.
We had a strange experience Ionic. Last night, actually. After we finished the lecture, I just, you know, I had loudspeakers, which were just hooked up to a microphone. Mm-hmm. And when I went over to shut one of them off, I walked over, and I could hear a radio signal coming through the loudspeaker, which wasn't hooked to anything, except a microphone.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of strange.
You know, as Steve has told me a number of instances where when he's known of the wiring within a building, you know,
picking things up.
And you know, if you can explain something like that happening, well, then how can you then say that the EVP that you think you've recorded hasn't happened from that source? It becomes, it's just introducing a question. So we're fighting belief because we believe we want it to be EVP, but can you rule out beyond all reasonable doubt that it wasn't something natural that's done it?
What if it is a direct response?
Well, that's good. You've got to try and test. You've got to try and find out what it is. It's difficult.
The thing is, the electrical wires could simply be conduits for the frequencies that we can't typically hear anyway. It might not just be so natural that it's something being generated from a radio station. It could be something that is there that we normally wouldn't detect with our ears that is being conducted through the wires.
But you can test for certain things like that.
Some things you can test for, yes.
So, yeah.
But, you know, not all EVPs would make sense on a radio show.
No, I would agree with you.
Yeah, so. Well, then let me ask you, you said that you would bring a camera along or even a video. So it sort of presents a dichotomy because you were just telling me that the camera can't really capture orbs, which would be, you know, a different light spectrum. What do you think you're going to capture on the camera if you can't capture orbs or ghosts? Why do you bother bringing it?
The thing is, we don't know what a ghost is. We've got what people's ideas of what they could be.
Okay, then how about mists and spirits? And we get black fog sometimes that show up on the camera. You will take consecutive pictures. There will start to be like a black fog moving in or black mist. It becomes opaque, and then the next shot, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if that's a ghost, but it does appear to be something paranormal. So if you don't feel that the camera's picking that up, why do you even bring a camera along?
I think you've got to measure it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
You know, you've got to bring the camera along, but you've also got to be aware of what the shortcomings of the cameras are.
Yeah.
You know, digital cameras and so on, you know, they do struggle in low light. It's all about lighting.
Well, how would you interpret that something might be paranormal that you've captured on your camera? How would you deem it paranormal? And if you don't think anything's paranormal, why bring the camera?
Well, the thing is, you have to bring... I know what you're saying, but to interrogate the data that you've got, you would need a photographic expert to be able to look at the data, the mm-hmm. raw data from the file. Mm-hmm. And I've seen numerous examples over the years where the data has showed it's just an irregularity or a problem with the camera and that makes it look like it's something unusual, but in fact it's not. It's so difficult to try and make a cover-all explanation because every case is different.
Sure.
It is difficult. I mean, for example, why have the lights out?
I would think because to cut down on glare for one thing.
But then if the experience is in daylight.
Well, true. That doesn't make sense. I agree with you there.
It tends to be a Victorian thing. Let's have all the lights out. Let's use night vision cameras.
Which brings up a question. If you are in the dark and using infrared, do you think that the infrared actually sees anything that you wouldn't see anyway?
I'm
not quite sure what I'm trying to say there, but I think you know.
I think I know, but I mean, I don't tend to go using them because it just adds another variable.
Right.
Okay.
As I've always said, I stick to what I know. I stick to what I do, and I don't profess to be an expert, so I stay away from it.
Okay, so this film that you're doing is considered a documentary, right? Okay, so you are really focusing on the differences between U.S. ghost sightings and ghost hunting and U.K. ghosts and sightings and ghost hunting. So what are some of the differences that you've noticed?
You'll have to watch the documentary. I can't tell you.
I'm only teasing.
My other interest is the media and how the media portrays the paranormal.
Okay.
But I also have a fascination for the stories that I've grown up with and the reading of the books, but equally a fascination with the American culture and their stories. And there are some similarities. Mm. The American culture, has borrowed bits from lots of different cultures and developed their own. For example, you have crybaby bridges.
Mm-hmm.
We don't in
None,
the UK.
Huh? Did
no,
you know
not
of?
That I'm aware of.
Yeah.
But we have phantom trains of a funeral procession. There's the famous story of Abraham Lincoln's ghost train.
That's right, Ohio.
So we do share phantom hitchhikers.
Mm-hmm.
But we've now caught the black-eyed children.
Now we've caught them. Do you feel that that's kind of a fabrication? What do you think about that? Do you think that
I can't say it's fabrication because I've got no evidence to say that people have been lying. However, you do see trends.
Okay.
What becomes popular, you start to see filtering through. Shadow people is something that I think has started in the States, and we're starting to have them in the UK.
I've seen one.
Yeah. I mean, is that just a change on what has always been a misty figure or seeing a shadow?
Mm-hmm.
A shadow people, something different. I don't know. It's the semantics. It's the understanding of trying to understand what it is that you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Is your interpretation of a shadow in person the same as mine?
Well, there's a variety. There's like the Hat Man, or there's shadow person. Then they even talk about like just black blobs that you can't see through that sort of loosely have the form of a person. Yeah. There's been one that seems to wear a derby hat. Another one that seems to wear like a broad brimmed hat. Mm.
But then could that just be an apparition? Why has it got this specific label of being a shadow person?
That's what we were talking about before. Why could it not be an apparition? Why could it not become a solid person? Mm. Who knows? It's probably a matter of perception. Yeah. Or maybe it's more inherent to whatever the phenomenon is.
Or it could be, and I'm just throwing it out there, that the person who's witnessed it has some sight problems.
It could be sight problems.
Yeah, so we have to look at the whole picture.
Yeah, or it could be something that's really a negative energy form of some kind.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other
perceptual
thing. The other thing that fascinates me at the moment is how the demonic seems to be becoming more and more prevalent.
True.
Ratings.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to mention that certain individual in his show, but it does.
But we all know who it is.
Yeah, it does seem to catch on what is popular in American culture finds its way across the Atlantic, not via canoe, but, you know.
Well, here's something else that kind of seems to occur a lot in the UK, throughout the UK. What about presages of death? There are different little omens that show up in certain families. And, you know, say like there was a story in there about a lime tree. And if the large branch fell, then a member of the family was going to die. Or if a little black dog shows up. The ghost dog, and then the member of the family is going to die. I mean, if these things do repeatedly happen, what do you think about that?
Oh, I mean, you're talking of things like banshees, the Irish banshee.
Yep, they fall in that category. You
know, every culture in the British Isles, they have them in Scotland, they have them in England, Ireland and Wales. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a natural phenomenon?
Unfortunately, what you tend to find is that they tend to be shrouded in folklore. I've yet to find a very recent example.
But see, there are a lot
example.
It's got to have an inception somewhere.
Yeah, but it could just be folklore. It could just be a great story that has been passed down the ages.
It isn't just one family. These things seem to keep recurring within families, within a family history.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, if I was going to look for evidence, what are my sources? Where is it coming from? It's written in books, but do we have an actual witness?
Well, if you were to interview the witness, would that be kind of good evidence
for
you?
It would be, but where are they? When was the last solid report?
Oh, there were a variety on your website.
They're on the website, but they're folkloric.
Yeah.
None of them are... We haven't had a recent report.
Oh, truly? Okay.
I mean, there's many of them.
You know, we had Barry Fitzgerald on. He was the one who wrote Banshees, right? Barry Fitzgerald?
I don't remember the name of the book, but...
Banshees, I believe, is the name of it. And he had a lot of firsthand information of people who had experiences, either hearing a woman... wail or seeing a hag at their front door. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were firsthand accounts that he had in his book. Not all of them, but some of them.
No. And it goes
more
back,
contemporary.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a witness who can come forward and say, you know, when it was, and you can actually speak to them to get the information, that's interesting. Unfortunately, a lot of the ones that we have, and certainly on the Great British Ghost Tour website, they are stuff of legend. Almost stuff of folklore. They're hundreds of years old, and there's accounts in books, but that's all they are. There's nobody.
That's all they seem to be.
Well, that's at the moment. That's all they are because nobody's come forward and say this was happening to me.
Well, do you think they really would, though? Do you think a lot of personal people would come forward and give you that information?
I would hope so. If it happens. If they experience it, then yes, come forward.
Well, do people contact you with information about ghost sightings and
very
whatnot?
Very rarely. Very, very rarely.
Well, see what I mean? They need a source to go to.
Well, I'll give you an example of something that happened a couple of back last year. And this is what concerns me with the whole state of investigation. A friend put a Facebook post on and said, I've got a friend who's reporting a set of unusual occurrences in her home. The first thing that people started putting on was, I'll come and do a cleansing. I'll come and do this. I'll come and do that. I'll come around with a load of equipment. Until I put on there, hang on a minute.
You don't know what it is.
We don't know what's going on. We don't know whether this woman, what kind of family situation we've got going on here. Mm. We don't know the psychology of what's going on. We don't know a whole host of things. And yet everybody's assuming that it's something paranormal. You know, you've got to put the care of the witness first. You've got ethical considerations.
Mm-hmm.
People assume so much straight away, and we don't get reports so much anymore. It tends to go, you know, because of what they see on television. They have some expectations about what they need to do, so they just, you know, go online, get the local group to come and investigate, and they turn up straight away with all this equipment and don't ask questions.
Yeah, that's really lax. That I think that's a terrible approach, just assuming. Yeah. Are you familiar with Richard Estep and then his book about the cage?
I am aware of the cage in St. Osyth in England.
Yes.
I'm aware that one of our colleagues from the Society for Psychical Research, John Fraser, has spent a lot of time investigating, interviewing witnesses, and looking into the case. But I'm yet to read anything from Richard.
He investigated there for like 5 days. He and Stephen Wiedner.
Stephen Wiedner.
Yeah. A lot of interesting stuff, but of course it had been a prison for a bit. And it was, I think, just pretty much just one single room, but two levels. A lot of really strange things happened there. And a woman owns it, an individual, private citizen owns it, and she allowed them to come in. She had to wind up moving out of the place because what was happening to her was so disturbing. And she would get appearances and whatnot. And it was bothering her and her child. What do you think about situations like that where there's a lot of activity going on and people are really distressed?
Unfortunately, it's a bit of a tricky one to answer. You've got to put the needs of the witness first. In relation to that particular case, I'm aware that John Fraser has spent a considerable amount of months, if not years, looking at that case.
Oh, truly?
Yeah, he's really gone into a lot of depth on it.
In depth.
Hopefully not in depth.
No, me either.
And it's a case I think is probably worthy of a bit more attention. But in terms of the legitimacy of it, I haven't read any of the reports on that as yet.
Well, do you agree that there's negative energy and maybe neutral energy, energy that's just energy, but energy perhaps that might be negatively directed towards someone?
No.
Okay.
Again, it goes back to the what we believe, and I avoid that. I want to get all the facts.
Okay.
Because you can perceive something to be negative, but it's just your personal opinion. It might not be. Who knows?
Well, then the comparative study that you're making, is it really just comparative folkloric study then?
So I don't get what you mean.
Well, since you can't really say that it's paranormal or that people are actually witnessing something paranormal, so you're delving into the history on each side, that's the background of these occurrences. But all you're really doing is just kind of reviewing stuff that's either folkloric or some of the history that's connected to what people say they see, but you're not determining that what you're investigating is paranormal.
No, I'm not determining what it is. I'm not making a decision on whether it is or not. The Great British Ghost Tour is simply just a celebration of haunted heritage.
Oh, okay.
It's not there to a sort of persuade somebody either way. It's there because I am interested in culture and ghost stories.
And the nice stories.
And the stories. Yeah. That's what all they could be. I don't know.
Not that they're real.
They might have some basis, in fact. Who knows? But that's what that is very much about. It's the two sides of what I'm interested in.
Yeah. But as a reflection of culture.
Yeah. When it comes to investigating, that's got to be straight down the line.
Yeah.
That's got to be, impartial study.
Okay. Well, now.
Right.
Well, I know more than I started. Are there any stories in there that particularly pique your interest? Like, what kinds of stories pique your interest then?
Wow. Crikey. It's racing through my mind at the moment. Which particular ones? There are so many.
There are.
There are so many. Because obviously on the Great American Ghost Tour one, I'm just trying to think of ones that have really sort of appealed to me. And the RMS Queen Mary is probably one case that has really sort of caught my attention.
Do you mean in
Long Beach?
Beach?
Yeah, I stayed on there for two nights in June.
What do you like about that? Or what intrigues you about that?
The whole history of the ship, its significance, and also the amount of stories that are associated with it.
There are a lot. Yeah.
There are a lot. But again, it's a commercial venture. You know, part of me thinks, well, when you've got that haunted, was it room B340? They've now opened that up so you can actually stay on it in that particular room.
Hmm.
It's going to cost you $500 to $800 a night.
Oh, truly?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Ooh. So I decided not to.
You pass on that one. Huh?
I think my wife would have been, well, I think I might have been divorced if I said I was going to stay in that room. But, you know, it can be such a money earner, and that's what makes me think,
You do have to look at that.
I'm
follow
not saying
the money.
That, you know, I'm not saying they're doing anything untoward.
No, but it might taint their...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, what they're having to say.
It's a huge money spinner. You know, the paranormal is a huge money spinner at the same time, which makes things become very difficult when it comes to wanting to investigate things.
How about the example of the Kilworthy house? There was a Judge Glanville who wanted his daughter to marry a goldsmith, and she fell in love with a sailor. So the daughter and the sailor decided to kill the goldsmith, and the trial judge wound up being her father, and he sentenced her to death. But the name of the house is Kilworthy, and he felt that her daughter was worthy of being killed. And I'm wondering if there's a strange connection there, or is that...
Crumbs, I'm just trying to recall the story, because this is a website I've been working on for 10 years.
Okay.
And just trying to pick out, I think there's thousands of accounts on there. I'm just trying to pick out that particular one. I'm like, oh...
You mean you don't remember each and every one of them?
No.
Well, just kind of caught my eye. There are still sightings of the woman. She, they can hear her dress rustling. And it says it's Cox. It's Anton Hippisley Cox.
Anton Hippisley Cox, yes.
Yeah, he regards this as one of the best authenticated ghosts in Devon. I was just wondering what you thought about that story.
Knowing what I know about... his book, Haunted Britain, which is one of the books I had, one of the earliest ones I had. There's not a great attention to detail in it.
Yeah.
And it's a great gazetteer of things that have been reported around the UK. But what I have noticed is when I've looked at what he's written and then I've started comparing with other sources, certainly for other places around the UK, there are discrepancies.
Yeah.
So that goes back to what I'm saying earlier. It's a great celebration of our haunted heritage.
But you can't believe everything you read or everything you hear.
Exactly.
Truly, yeah.
So, you know, you just got to take it for what it is. It's a great bit of our haunted culture. True or false, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
That's part of the fun.
What do you think about the Headless Horseman stories? Fitzford House. Fitzford. Do you recall that one?
The crumbs.
It's Wicked Lady Howard. That's what she's referred to. And supposedly she's been accused of killing her four husbands. And I don't know if it's on every anniversary. Well, once a year anyway, supposedly her.
Is that Okehampton Castle?
Yes.
That's one of the famous ones from Devon. Again, it's closely linked to folklore. You know, I don't recall any recent sightings.
Yeah.
Of these, a lot of these reports are from centuries ago. And we all know that, in certain parts of Britain, when smuggling was rife, the smugglers used to concoct these stories as a way of keeping the locals from paying too much attention to what they were getting up to.
Mm.
They make great stories for a Halloween night or when dark... stormy nights are upon us. Whether there's anything in them, I don't know. Who knows? Without spending a lot of time in that area to find out.
So do you just read them to get a thrill?
Don't we all? Yeah, I think we all do. I think we all enjoy reading a good creepy ghost story.
Well, I think it's only enhanced if you can back it up with history. For you, if you back it up with evidence.
Yes.
And they aren't always one and the same.
Very true.
But they're closely aligned, don't you think?
They can be.
Well, it's a little bit after 11, isn't it?
It is a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to focus on, pinpoint, bring to our attention?
No, I think one of the other areas I'm interested in is just how the media really have a responsibility and influence.
Oh, they can conform, you know, your way of thinking and tell you what to think.
And what I will say
subliminally.
I think the one that is most we should remember more of is Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Because I think that a lot of these ghost hunting groups want to be Ghostbusters. They've got their uniforms, they've got their t-shirts with their logos, they've got their little gadgets, you know.
Yep.
They want to be the response. They want to be the ones that turn up in their
they've got to have their heroes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and I fell in love with that movie as a kid. It was a huge influence on, you know, my path. and I think if we can laugh at ourselves a little bit more and take ourselves less seriously when it comes to ghost busting, it would be great.
That's probably a very good point. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
But I think it boils down to you have to pay attention to your own personal experiences. I think that's very important for each individual.
Yeah.
You can tell somebody about it, but they have their own way of interpreting it too.
They do. They do. Everybody interprets. Everybody's different.
Everybody's
we're all unique.
Different. And yeah, I think I was talking to you. I don't know.
Who, me?
What I'm about to say is I think every paranormal experience, no two are alike. There are similarities, but people experience the same thing in different ways.
Yes.
Yeah. And like we've said to each other many times, personal experiences to the person, you know,
are good evidence to the person.
You're not going to convince anybody else of it unless they have the same experience.
Yeah. You know witness experience, if you have two witnesses to one event, there will be differences in each report.
Yep.
It's the way we perceive and remember things.
It certainly can be attributed to physicality, to physical attributions, but it doesn't make it any less real either.
No.
Well, I guess I've said my piece.
Okay. So, you want to give out websites, Dylan, and anything that you got coming up?
I'd love to. There's the Great British Ghost Tour, which is GAGT.co.uk. This obviously stands for, GB, Great British Ghost Tour. The GAGT is the Great American Ghost Tour. So there's those two sites. For more information about Parascience, which I'm part of, it's parascience.org.uk. Mm-hmm. And there's also the ghosthunter.co.uk, which is a new one that Steve and I have been working on, with information about things like ethics, ghostology, which is the book that he wrote, looking at things like, you know, measuring temperature. And there's going to be more things added on there as we go along.
And the new book that he just came out with, the
notes.
The blue one there.
Yeah, the blue book.
I just got that one.
It's the guidance notes for investigators of spontaneous cases. So Steve wrote that. It's looking at the book that was produced by the Society for Psychical Research a number of years ago, bringing it up to modern standards. Mm. It's available on Amazon. And it just goes through things like ethics, interviewing witnesses. Mm. It's a really succinct book, which would help investigators with the process of dealing with cases of apparitions, hauntings, poltergeists, and other spontaneous phenomena. It's a really, really good book. Strongly advise anybody who's got a legitimate investigative interest picking a copy of that up.
I have one. I got
Brilliant.
It the other day.
Great stuff. And it's only about 40, 50 pages long, I think. So it's succinct.
Yeah. Perhaps MUFON would do well in getting a copy of that, you think?
I think anybody who has an interest in
interviewing,
you know, understanding people's paranormal experiences and how to go about investigating them. Yeah, it's a great little book to get.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Any upcoming presentations or engagements? Or?
For me, back in the UK, Steve and I have got some things going on around Halloween, as is normal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be working on, obviously, this documentary. I'm going to be putting that together, as well as putting some updates to the websites. And we'll see what next year has in store.
Okay. Any idea yet when the documentary will be out?
I'm hoping March, April time.
Wow.
But I've got to finish the one on the RMS Queen Mary first, which is only going to be about 15 minutes. Oh, okay. But yeah, this one will be a little bit longer. And then hopefully over to New York next year if they do a premiere for the new Ghostbusters film.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
You know, New York isn't too far from here. It's so you're going to have to come up and say hi.
Well, if I can, I will. Definitely.
Looking forward to seeing this documentary.
What's the drive from New York? About four hours?
5 hours.
5 hours.
Okay.
we'll meet you halfway.
That's fine. That's fine. I'll do that.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Dylan.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on this evening. It's been really enjoyable.
Wonderful. I'm glad you didn't exhaust yourself swimming across the Great Pond.
Are you going to make it back again, or are you waterlogged now?
You're going to fly back, right?
Flying back next Wednesday. And do you know what? I have to say, I am absolutely in love with New England.
I absolutely
adore it. I think the people are fantastic. Scenery is stunning. And you've got some pretty good ghost stories as well.
Well, you're pretty swell yourself.
Oh, thank you very much. We blush now.
thank you so much, Dylan.
Yes, thank you very much, Dylan.
Have a safe fly back.
A safe fly or a safe swim, whichever you decide on. So, hey, that's Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. You have a great evening. You have been listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the Internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org.